Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
I woke up this morning. It's really cold, isn't it?
In the morning.
It's really dark. It's really depressing. I went downstairs.
A cracking start to a podcast.
I went downstairs to make a cup of tea, and I listened to a podcast where they were talking about, I think one of the effects of Brexit was that loads of British firms just won't bother exporting. And then I listened to another podcast where people at the New York Times were seriously talking about the breakup of the United States because it was ungovernable. And I got so depressed by all this. I was thinking of going back to bed, just pulling the sheets over my head. And then I thought, no, I got a really good idea for a stack one game.
Excellent.
For Mark Keller.
Puts a spring in your step. Twinkle in your toes.
Here we go.
Go on.
This is the one that, right. Bands who were shortlisted for the Mercury Music Prize or craft beers?
Okay. Very good.
Bands who were shortlisted for the Mercury Music Prize or craft beers?
That's
are you ready?
That's hilarious.
Here we go. Number one, Dead Pony Club.
Is that
the band who was shortlisted for the Mercury Music Prize or a craft beer?
It can't possibly be a beer. That's a band.
No, it's a low-amplitude, high-voltage hop hit. Alive with flavour, it's hopped to the Pacific shores and back. Dive into aromas of citrus, lemongrass and lime zest.
That is good.
Malt-based ebbs to a huge hop hit, washing tropical fruit, floral garlands and spicy undertones all over your palate.
Hey! You forged it! That's fantastic. Pony Club is the name of a beer. That's brilliant, isn't it?
Okay, here we go. New Young Pony Club. Is that a band who was shortlisted for the Mercury Music Prize or a craft beer? Young Pony Club.
That has to. I'm getting confused here because of the fact that Peter Buck had a band called Tired Pony, I think. So I'm saying that there can't be two beers with such similar sounding names.
New Young Pony Club are a Mercury Prize nominated English electronic music band from London. There you go.
Fair enough.
Next one. Polar Bear. Polar Bear, is that a band who was shortlisted for the Mercury Music Prize or a craft beer?
I can see that as a logo on a beer bottle for some reason. So I'm going to go for... I'm saying it's a beer.
It's a British experimental jazz band led by drummer Seb Rochford.
These are great. This works brilliantly. Go on.
Here we go. Unicorn Rodeo. Is that a band who was shortlisted for the Mercury Music Prize or a craft beer? Unicorn Rodeo. Here you go. Over to you, Mark Allen.
Unicorn Rodeo. It's got to be a band. I just can't see anyone drinking about the Unicorn Rodeo. It's a band.
It's an easy drinking super fresh pale ale brewed with pills and malt to make it extra pale. It's got a 4% ABV. There we go. Go Go Penguin. Is that a band?
Go Go Penguin. It's probably a hoppy 9% fruity ale. It's a beer. Come on.
No, it's not. The band's music features breakbeats, minimalist piano melodies, powerful bass lines, drums inspired from electronic and anthemic riffs. So there you go.
It's so funny. There's something very funny about those long definitions being read out. I'm afraid I've got someone out for you, actually. But those are brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic.
Here we go. Well, yeah, a couple more.
Go on.
Okay. Swamp Hog.
That's a beer.
Gotta
be a beer.
It's an IPA in the New England style.
I can fancy plenty of
what about Astronomy Domine?
Well, Well, you'd think they were a psychedelic rock band, wouldn't you? And I'm going to stick with that, actually, because I think that's a long, complicated thing. You couldn't go to the bar and ask for a pint of astronomy. If you'd had two pints of it already, you wouldn't even be able to pronounce it, I would have thought.
It is. Its description on its website of Astronomy Domine goes flicker, 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 blam, pow, pow, peach, coconut and vanilla, Sabro and milk sugar in the DIPA. So it's an India Pale Ale.
That's fantastic. I win outright. That's hilarious. Well, look, I've got one for you now. We were trying to count up how many stack waddies we'd done the other day, and I think it's got to be in the mid 70s now. Could be nearly 80.
Oh, stack waddies, God, is it really?
Yeah, I think it nearly can't be. So, therefore, the one I'm going to try on you, which is so core stack waddy, it's so central stack waddy, that I've got this haunting feeling we may have done it already. But if we have, it doesn't matter. Let me try you, okay? Progressive rock band or character from The Lord of the Rings? Yeah, is it worth it? Come on.
I don't think we've done that.
I don't think we have done it. And it just seems so obvious now. And we should have done it. And that can be rectified immediately. Okay, I've got 10 of them. Big Elf. Big Elf. Is that a progressive rock band?
There can't be a character in Tolkien called Big Elf. It's too funny. So I'm gonna say progressive rock band.
No, you're absolutely right. They're a progressive rock band formed in Los Angeles in 1991 with a penchant for vintage gear, complex harmonies, and over-the-top live performance. Very good. Shagrat.
Oh, good God. Tolkien character.
Shagrat, you're doing very well. Shagrat discovered the unconscious Frodo Baggins following the Hobbit's encounter with the giant spider Shelob, as any fool know. Murgash.
Murgash.
They're great names, aren't they? Murgash.
Oh, God. I was saying Tolkien. I'm guessing Tolkien.
God, you're doing too well. It's a high-ranking Black Uruk officer who served under the Witch King of Angmar. So you're absolutely right. You're 100% so far. Sensational. Okay, Snovi.
Ooh, how are we spelling that?
S-N-O-V-I, Snovi.
Good grief. Progressive rock band.
God, this is... How can I trip you up? It is not indeed. It's not an orc, but it's a band from Pula, Croatia. The music they perform is mainly instrumental and represents a fusion of progressive rock, psychedelic and ambient motifs. It says here. Okay, Lugdush.
Lugdush. Two more from them after the news.
Yeah, Lugdush.
Lugdush. Band.
No, Lugdush is one of the Uruk High Scouts led by Ugluk that captured Merry and Pippin beneath Amon Hen and then took them westwards to Isengard. There'll probably be people listening here. There's probably some deep end Lord of the Rings fans listening here. Will probably write in and complain you've got something wrong there. But that's the detail that I've got.
Not taking it with the appropriate seriousness.
I know. Okay. Squacket.
Squacket.
That's a great name, isn't it? Squacket.
Oh, good God. I don't know. Toss up. Band. Band.
It is. Well, I've never heard of them. It's actually a band formed by Chris Squire and Steve Hackett in 2012. Well. Squire and Hackett. Squacket. They're releasing an album called A Life Within a Day, which included a reworking of the song Aliens Are Only Us from the Future. So there we go. Squacket. I know. Okay, a couple more. Harken.
Band.
Yeah, prog band from the multi-instrumentalist Richard Hensel. Sixth album just out called Virus. That's nice. Azog.
Azog. Tolkien.
Yeah, powerful orc chieftain who claimed rulership over the abandoned dwarfish mines of Moria during the Third Age. I thought you'd know that, Dave. Okay, there was two more. Voivod.
Voivod. Voivod is a band,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Canadian. Maybe you've heard of them. Canadian prog metal band from Quebec.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Featuring Dennis Snake Bellinger, Daniel Chewy Mongrain, and Dominic Rocky LaRoche.
Because it's interesting, isn't it, really? Because I read Tolkien years and years ago. I've forgotten it. But a word like voivod is not... You can't imagine Tolkien coining it, can you? Somehow it's too futuristic. Maybe. Voivod. It's too Soviet.
Yeah, that's a word. That's a good point.
It's not Middle England, is it?
It's not. Whereas Murgash and Shagrat are more 1950s. When it was written,
they're of the soil. They're words of the soil.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, that's carry on.
Okay, and the last one is Gothmog.
Gothmog,
band or Lord of the Rings character?
Lord of the Rings character.
He is indeed the Lieutenant of Morgul. Prior to the revolt of Noldor, he was the High Captain of Angband. All of those could make good band titles, couldn't they? I think you've absolutely triumphed there, Dave. The craft beer thing was genius. Good work. Good work.
It gives
so
us.
So what else is happening? So did you see the story?
My wife says to me, what are you doing this morning? I said, I didn't dare tell her. I was talking to Mark and quizzing him about Mercury Music Prize winners or craft beers. I don't think she'd see it as work, really, would she?
No, but anyway. She'd see it as, well, it's of national importance, isn't it? Keeping the entertainment flag flying. So look, did you see the story in the Times by Hunter Davis about a song that had been written about?
I didn't. Go on.
Oh, it's just a lovely story. I mean, I'd kind of read the story about McCartney going out to stay with him before, because I think he's done that in his autobiographies. But basically, in December 68, he and his wife and his two kids were out in Portugal in their little house, and he'd sent a postcard to McCartney saying, do come, because they're old pals, and he'd written the Beatles' official authorized biography. And he'd written to McCartney, sent him a postcard saying, do come and stay if you want to. And suddenly, in the middle of the night, there's this ringing on the doorbell. And it's McCartney. It's just, it gives you an amazing insight to McCartney's life. He suddenly decides spontaneously, having met Linda and split up with Jane, that I probably just wanted to break, get out of the place and just escape. And he can't get onto a flight in time. And so Mal Evans organises a private plane, takes him to Spain, and then there's an £80 taxi journey to Hunter's place, where he turns up with no money. And £80, quite a lot, actually, wasn't it, in 1968?
Was it that Hunter, much? Really?
Yeah, £80. Hunter's then...
He told me this story when we had him on Word and Your Ear years ago. He had to search for all the cash he could find in the house to pay it. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, over the course of the 10 days that he stays, he discovers that Hunter's first name is actually Edward. Edward Hunter Davis, as in the same way that McCartney's is actually James Paul McCartney, and becomes obsessed with his idea and decides to write a song about him. And he writes a song called There You Go, Eddie. And he is, I think, only recently discovered that the Beatles did work this up, and they recorded a version of it in the Let It Be sessions in January 1969. And there's now, and I think this is only recently arrived because I'd never heard of it, and various Deep End fabs, pals of mine hadn't heard of it either, but There You Go, Eddie is now available on YouTube, and we should... plug it. Yeah, you can hear it. And I thought it was just such a great story. And his whole angle is, I want Paul Jackson to include this. I want to be immortalised in song, as you would, because you imagine being mentioned in a Beatles lyric. That's fantastic, isn't it? How thrilling is that? Dear Prudence, Prudence Farrow.
Mia Farrow's sister.
Dr. Robert Freeman was also mentioned in a Beatles song. And Peter Brown, who was the assistant of Epstein, was mentioned in the Ballad of John Yoko. You remember that? Peter Brown called to say, you can make it okay, you can get married in Gibraltar near Spain. What a finely chiseled lyric that is.
Yeah. didn't Joni Mitchell, Joni Mitchell definitely did say in her song, songs are like tattoos.
That's right.
They crown and anchor you, so that you never shake them off.
Yeah.
if you once, what was the first one that you mentioned in that list of songs? I can't remember.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence being a classic case. You know, that she was there in Rishikesh, wasn't she? And the story subsequently told, probably John Lennon told it in the Rolling Stone interview, that was the Maharishi came onto her. And I think that's something that they're still having to kind of clarify or deny 50 years later.
Yeah.
All because it was once in a song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you put it in a song, it's there, particularly if it's a Beatles song. It's there forever.
No one was ever quite sure if that was true, though. You know,
that's what I mean.
The general
that's
feeling
what I mean.
Was that they it looked like that they all collectively just decided this is a con and this is a waste of time, but possibly apart from George, and let's go home. And they needed an excuse to be able to justify the fact they're all going to pack up and leave virtually overnight. And that excuse was, oh, he's turned out to be a bit of a perv, you know. So God knows if that was true. But once
it's in a song, you know, the song is, you know, is out there forever, isn't it?
It you is.
Know, it's halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers,
on. Exactly.
And forevermore.
But Matt Busby, Charles Hawtrey, all these people got mentioned in Beatles songs. Lovely.
That's true. Yeah.
My favourite mention of a, I suppose what we call an ordinary person, because mostly people write about famous people, don't they? Or celebrity pals or whatever. But my favourite one is Disco 2000. Do you know that by Pulp? It's a fantastic song.
All right, yeah.
Your house is very small with woodchip on the wall, you know. And it's a song about a girl called Deborah Bone. It's a really sweet story. And it's about Jarvis Cocker was born within an hour of this girl, and their mums are both great pals. And their whole thing is that maybe the mums engineered this idea, but that they would finish up married to each other. You know, they're inseparable friends, and they go to school. She becomes really, really fashionable, and everybody fancies her. And he becomes this kind of awkward, geeky, kind of bespectacled, slightly kind of. He just kind of loses his key with life slightly, and he's there looking at her from afar. And they kind of decide that they're all going to meet up on the year 2000, and it's just a lovely. But be there at 2 o'clock by the fountain down the road. It's a really moving little song.
Yeah,
he wonders what's happened
sweet,
to her. Yeah, it's really. She must have been absolutely knocked out. Would you hear that? It's fantastic.
Yeah. No, that's a very sweet idea to have attached to you, isn't it?
It is. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
It's not scandalous in any way, you know.
I can remember our family sitting around when I was very young in the 1960s talking about the year 2000. I don't know if you ever did. What would it be like? And we really did think it was all going to be jetpacks. That was the science fiction fantasy, wasn't it? From kind of comics that people would commute by strapping on a kind of thing with rockets on it, fly off to London, you know. Hilarious.
Isn't there a band called, or didn't there used to be a band called We Should Have Jetpacks?
Oh, God, there was, yes.
There Should Be Jetpacks.
Something like that, yes, it was.
I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, somebody out there will be listening and going, it was called so-and-so. So, anyway, we'll work it out during the break.
The Word Podcast, prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So during the break, we've established the group were called We Were Promised Jetpacks. And they from Scotland, indie group.
They were a Scottish indie group and a grand tradition. The other one I remembered was Get Cape, Wear Cape, Fly. I don't know why. That seems related somehow.
It's a memorable name.
There was a time when all those groups, we were talking about this the other day, we've got a fuzz box and we're going to use it. You know,
we're
those kind of
use it.
Lumpy, complicated names just seem.
I like those names.
I do too.
There's a lightness about them, but they were long, you know.
So once they got a hit, they had to call themselves Fuzzbox because, of course, you go from being John Peel show favourites to kind of daytime Radio 1, and they can't cope with it. Title like that. But anyway.
Yeah,
so look, in other news, Alan Parsons Project. Alan Parsons, your old pal, who you interviewed, I remember, and worked at Abbey Road and all that. Alan Parsons Project are still going under the name the Alan Parsons Project Band, The Project. There's another classically ungainly name. But he's suing to stop them using it because he's not in the band. So that's a grand tradition, isn't it?
You can kind of see that, can't you, really?
Yeah.
And names are sorry about this phone's ringing.
That's all right, don't worry.
My wife will get it at some point. Eventually. Oh, no,
there she is.
Here we go. Oh, good God, I can't believe this. Hang on a second.
We're going to hear the whole telephone conversation. Yes, he's upstairs talking to Mark Ellen. Yes, I know. Yeah, it's craft beers versus Mercury Music Prize winners. Yeah, that's how he spends his time. It's absolutely astonishing. I know. Well, keeps him out of mischief, keeps him off the streets, gives him a little bit of interest. Is she there? Dave, we lost you completely. Welcome to the Word Podcast.
Well, we're still recording.
We're still recording. Just, keep going.
That's ridiculous. I don't know. The fans have never done that before.
That's very funny. Anyway, we were talking that interrupted a very important conversation about the Alan Parsons Project band, The Project.
No, just the use of names and, you know, that people trying to appropriate names. You know, that like you always talk about, isn't Roger Waters, when touring returns, when Roger Waters tours, he's billed as the genius
behind Pink Floyd. That's
Pink
right,
Floyd.
I think
so. So they get Pink Floyd in the billing, and you can kind of see where comes from. But no, I disappeared down various internet rabbit holes recently, looking into the issue of the. You remember Fleetwood Mac in 1974? This is the first time that this was a big story, was the idea of a band, you know, touring as a group, which they didn't appear to be the group. And this is a very instructive story, because the early days, you know, the early 70s in Fleetwood Mac terms were a very, very chaotic time, you know. That Peter Green left in 1970, Jeremy Spencer left in 1971, you know, walked out, you know, the front man, walked out to join
Children of God, never came back, etc.
Danny Cowan left in 1972, and then the replacement, Bob Welsh, left in 1973.
Under a cloud,
when he was having an affair.
Having an affair with Fleetwood's wife. That's right.
Which gives you
you've got to love Fleetwood Mac.
Gives you an idea of the level of chaos
that keeps on giving.
Carried on in Fleetwood Mac at the time. And so they effectively just kind of fell apart. They weren't doing anything. They all buggered off to different places or whatever. Leaving this guy, Clifford Davis, who had been the kind of manager agent since the early days. Cliff Davis, real name Cliff Adams. And they didn't call him that because this is really going down internet rabbit holes. You remember the Cliff Adams Singers who used to do Something Simple on the radio? And so you couldn't have a guy called Cliff Adams anywhere associated with a rock band because it was a joke, Cliff Adams. So he changed his name. But anyway, somebody pointed out to me that here I have my copy of Mr. Wonderful, the Fleetwood Mac album from whenever.
I love that cover. Almost life size. Open it up and so we can see the skinny frame of Mick Fleetwood. Isn't that great? I know.
Anyway, really good record. And if you look at the credits on all the Peter Green songs on this album, you know, sort of Love That Burns and all that kind of stuff, it's still co-credited to P.A. Green, C.G. Adams. So we can only assume that their manager agent had an extraordinary musical ability.
Yes.
And so anyway, he was clearly knee-deep in Fleetwood Mac, you know. So he was the guy who said, well, you know, if you lot aren't going to go on tour because you're all falling out and sleeping with each other's wives and girlfriends or whatever, I'm going to put together a band to go on tour as Fleetwood Mac, which he did. And this consisted of various people that he managed, including Elmer Gantry of Elmer Gantry's Velvet Opera.
Okay. I didn't know that.
So all these people. And they just turned up to start playing in the States, because that was where the Fleetwood Mac made their money, in the beginning of 1974. And first date, I think, in Pittsburgh, and the promoter's there, and he watches these guys go past him off the tour bus into the Fleetwood Mac dressing room, and he thinks, I don't recognise any of them. And a book flute were met before. And there doesn't appear to be a 6'6" drummer either, you know, who tends to be...
And if I don't recognise them, then the audience may take exception to paying a hefty whack. So
he takes it up with, you know, with the manager, and there's, you know, there's some physical exchange of some kind goes on there. And so anyway, he decides that, oh, he's just going to let him go on. And apparently they went down quite well, actually, because the audience were too kind of stoned. And also, Fleetwood Mac changed members so often.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That people were quite used to them.
And the most recognisable member was behind the drums, so you couldn't necessarily... He wasn't kind of forefront of your mind, was he?
So anyway, I mean, the tour kind of staggered on a bit, and, you know, and it was eventually abandoned. There was a famous show in New York where Elmer Gantry obviously... decided, you know, laryngitis was his best policy to get out of this, what was it, becoming an increasingly grisly thing, you know. Oh, I can't sing, you know.
Yeah.
And they announced to the audience, this may not appear to be Fleetwood Mac. If you want your money back, you can have it, or you stick around. They took the stage without the singer, and they just said, we're going to jam a bit. Just to discharge... Can you imagine
band who aren't actually Fleetwood Mac, who didn't write any of the songs, and don't have a singer doing instrumental verses? Oh, God.
So the interesting thing is that Elmer Gantry and another member of the band, whose name I can't remember, are still around, and they were on Johnny Walker's program on Radio 2 only a few years ago, talking about this incident, and they still claim... to this day, that this was cooked up with the connivance of Mick Fleetwood, that Mick Fleetwood knew all about it and had agreed that this was going to go on, and he was going to join them in the tour later on. You know,
wouldn't he have made some money from performance rights? If a band is playing your songs, aren't you?
He wouldn't have written them anyway, would he? I mean,
that's true.
The idea is that they still say this was supposed to be a way of changing the membership of Fleetwood Mac, and that he would continue in the group, but then he got cold feet and he didn't do it. who knows the truth?
Yeah, make it up.
But
that's a brilliant story.
And if you're Elmer Gantry, you must think, I was this close. You know,
absolutely.
I was this close to being a member of Fleetwood Mac.
And isn't it nice to know that in some small corner of a foreign field, there was a conversation about Elmer Gantry's Velvet Opera going on now?
God. I thought it was absolutely extraordinary.
That's brilliant. That's a brilliant story.
And so, yeah, it sent me back to my old copy of Mr. Wonderful. And I don't know if he still gets royalties from his clearly his you know, his distinctive musical contribution. it's obvious to everybody, you know, to those songs. So yeah, and nowadays we all accept, surely, and I think this case in 1974 was the first indication of it. We all accept that the most valuable thing any band has is their name. It's the most important thing. It's the most important thing because they all keep going 40, 50 years later.
Roger Waters being the first to discover that. I remember him telling me in an interview, talking about being in, I think it's in Philadelphia, and he's playing a half-empty 3,000-seater venue in about 1988. And across the road, a band called Pink Floyd are selling out a kind of 70,000-seater stadium, playing all of his songs. And he said, what a terrible moment that was, you know. And you kind of realised, because I think he thought, I am Pink Floyd, you know, everyone knows that, you know.
Everyone knows it. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
They can only be attached to one name.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
So we're joined by Alex. Alex, have you been up late again, carrying on your marathon viewing of the entire Marvel franchise?
Yeah, it's still going. It's starting to feel like a bit of a slog, to be honest, but I'm committed and I'm going to do it. I'm less than halfway through the 4 gazillion hours you need to spend. I'm on season 2 of Daredevil at the moment, and they've just introduced immortal people, which I've been waiting I've been waiting for something like that to happen, because it's basically been like a law drama with lots of fighting. I needed some supernatural action, and I've got it. So that's boosting me for the next.
I love the idea that you're not even halfway through and it's already becoming a bit of a chore, but you've got to persevere. You've started, so you'll finish.
I've got to do it because they're bringing some more stuff out as of this month, so I've got to be up to date.
Otherwise, God.
You know, I'm doing completely the opposite. I'm only watching films made in the 1940s or 1950s.
What do you watch?
That's my new rule. During the last week, I mean, there's a load of this stuff on the BBC iPlayer at the moment. It's really good. Now, I've watched the like Citizen Kane and Sullivan's Travels, Strangers on the Train, The Apartment, Marnie, all this kind of stuff. No, Marnie's 60s.
God, Citizen Kane, let me stop you there. Citizen Kane, as I recall, there's the election in that, where the two sides, two opponents, try and stitch each other up, don't they, and slander each other's names and get each other arrested.
Well,
there's the suggestion of voter fraud if he loses.
We were just looking at it last night, and he owns the newspaper. Newspapers, obviously, and so there's a scene of the editor going, you know, showing the two potential front pages. One is Kane wins election, and
that's
the
right.
other is massive voter fraud.
The voter fraud, that's right, voter fraud. It's that's amazing.
It. He goes, which one's it gonna go? It says massive voter fraud. You thought, oh my God, these films are fresh as paint.
They're amazing. And
they're
writing.
Just extraordinary. And I tell you, the two things that get me about all these films is there's so concise. You could sit down after you watch them and you could write down the plot. You could remember the key things that happened in the stories, which I defy anybody to do with a contemporary film, because the plots are just too complicated. It's like the only person who understands them is the writer. There's two things. They're concise, well-plotted. And the other thing is they're hard as nails, these films. They're really tough. They have a really tough view of human nature. You know,
they do.
Against which most films made nowadays have got this kind of Pollyanna-ish.
That's
that
so true. They're brutal.
Going to come back. They're
the way people treat each other is absolutely brutal. You're absolutely right. But I think there might be an element of being able to see films more than once, where if it's a particularly different plot, you can go back and re-watch it and understand things. But God, I can still remember lines from that. There's one point he says, I don't think you'll like Chicago. He says, the wind comes howling in from the lake, and gosh knows if they've even heard of Lobster Newburgh. You think, that is just great writing. It's brilliant. Who is it? Mankiewicz, wasn't it? It's fantastic.
I have, and I thought it was kind of all right. But here's my challenge. Citizen Kane, go and watch it. Now write down the plot. Mank, go and watch it and write down the plot. You can't do the second one. Can't be worked out.
No, and the second one actually has the same kind of, reflections on the past and the structure is very similar, actually. There's a lot of kind of flashing back to what's happened before. But they do it in a very mysterious way, a very, very complicated, difficult way.
Yeah. So I've rediscovered the joys of a thing called a DVD player, Alex. I found something very exciting only last night, which is an unopened DVD. Look at that.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that Bonnie and Clyde?
Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I obviously bought in some kind of HMV 2 for £10 deal. And I've never even taken the
cellophane.
That's a good film.
Absolutely, it is. It is. So I'm graduating from the 40s and 50s to the 60s, I suppose.
I've got an unopened. I went to Sweden a few years ago, and a friend of mine, he runs a label over there called Cosmos, and it's kind of the beggars group of Scandinavia, I suppose. And I get to his office, and he knows I'm an Oasis fan, and he gives me this huge Oasis box set. As a prezi, because they did all their stuff over there. And I've still got it completely unopened. It's got about 15 records in there and booklets and all kinds of ephemera. But I've had it about 8 years and I still can't bear to take the cellophane off and open it.
If you ever get to the end of the Marvel Universe, the phones ringing again. That's really good news. Oh, no.
Great, I enjoy this. Oh, damn, she's got it this time. What a shame.
I tell you what I also watched, actually, which is also on the BBC iPlayer, which I really recommend, all the BBC iPlayer films, all the old films, fantastic. Zulu.
Oh, Zulu's great.
Zulu again.
Zulu's fantastic.
Zulu is a really good film. And I tweeted to the, I mean, I always knew it was a really good film, but it still stands up as a really good film. And I tweeted to the effect that the impressive thing about Zulu is a soundtrack. It's the noises.
It's the drumming.
Shield,
the thudding of bare feet on ground. It's fantastic. Absolutely. The guns.
And Chris Llewellyn, our old colleague, pointed out to me that loads of the crowd noise in Gladiator, okay, many years later, is sampled from Zulu.
Oh, wow.
That's brilliant. Interesting. Peak crowd noise.
It's just brilliant.
My favourite line in Zulu is where one of the infantry is sent to the top of the ridge to see if he can just see if he can report what's going on. I think you remember this.
Yeah.
And he comes back with the immortal phrase. He said, "What's happening up there, soldier?" He says, "Zulu, Sarge, thousands of them." I don't know why that's so funny, but he just said thousands of them, and you're sitting there thinking, "Oh my God, they're going to have a rough time." It's a great film.
What else would you expect? A view of Torquay? I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all... Stanley Baker is fantastic in it. Yeah, and, of course, it's a kind of Welsh production, isn't it, really? Stanley Baker produced it. And it's about a Welsh group of soldiers, weren't they? And he got Richard Burton to do the... excuse me, I've got to have a drink of water. To do the narration at the beginning and at the end. And so... Richard Burton obviously was only there for like half a day's work, but he's such a memorable part of it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Just hearing that. What a voice, Richard Burton. My God, what
fantastic.
A voice. So, the loads of films you can watch, Alex, if you decide to step out of your Marvel universe. There's a world out there.
There's other stuff out there.
Yeah. Sure. So, here we are in 2021. Which I couldn't leave unremarked without pointing out the fact that it's 50 years since the annus mirabilis of the rock and roll album, 1971. I should really write a book.
As immortalised, let's plug it heavily, if people aren't aware, in a book by David Hepworth.
In a book by David Hepworth.
Unput down.
So, when I was working on the book, I kept a kind of diary of, week by week through the year. Things that happened in 1971, this week in 1971. And this week in 1971 was the last gig at Mother's in Birmingham. And Mother's was the first kind of, it was the first legendary outside London venue, wasn't it, Mark?
It was.
I mean, it was the place everybody wanted to play. It was the hit place to play, you know. And there weren't any hit places to play in those days. There were students' unions, and then there were kind of...
Yeah, it's mostly college campus venues.
Yes, absolutely. Whereas Mother's was supposed to have a kind of funky ambience that everybody wanted to be in. And it's where bands used to spend a lot of time after hours jamming. Pink Floyd, the live tracks on Umma Gumma, I think, are recorded
at
Mother's. And the amazing thing about Mother's, I only discovered this when I was researching my book, is it was on the first floor above a furniture store in Erdington High Street in Birmingham. It was
the glamour
above a shop. Imagine that, you know. Imagine what the noise must have been like for this place. It's absolutely extraordinary. But everybody played there, you know. Fleetwood Mac, John Mayall, Free, Roy Harper, Straubs, Coliseum, Elton John, King Crimson, Canned Heat. Everybody played Mother's in Birmingham. But it was its last night was this week. It closed its doors on the 3rd of January. 1971. So it only had quite a brief period.
Is there a plaque on the wall? There should be.
I think there is. I think there is a plaque on the wall.
They're really awesome.
Yeah, it's a blue plaque was unveiled on the 13th of July 2013. It was the place, you know, that
it was anywhere where Pink Floyd played, you know. If you go there now, I think you probably find a small knot of people in damp greatcoats gathered with guttering candle.
I suppose you would. And this week in 1971, well, it's obviously, you know, Paul McCartney had served the writ to wind up the Beatles on New Year's Eve of 1970. And so it was the beginning of all that time in court. And do you know what was number one in the British charts? It's extraordinary to think. Dave Edmunds with "I Hear You Knocking."
Good God, was it really? Wow.
Yeah, it was.
It was a big deal, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. For a long time, on and off, really. He came back in various different guises, didn't he, really?
When did the Lennon Remembers interview came out? Because he gave that in December, didn't he? It must have come out January 71.
It came out two parts. I can't remember the actual date.
Can you remember that being published?
God, yeah. Lennon Remembers.
Lennon Remembers. Two. It was phenomenal. Where he described himself as the genius in the band. And he said a lot of the Beatles' work was dishonest. And yet he himself was so monstrously dishonest. At one point, he's asked when his songwriting partnership with McCartney ended. He said, around 1962. You think that's
It was so bitching. It was a classic case that he set out to destroy the reputation of the Beatles.
Completely. He said McCartney had treated him and Harrison as sidemen throughout. And he said George Martin's contribution was merely as a translator. I mean, it was just cruel, wasn't it?
He said, you've got to be a bastard to make it. We were the biggest bastards of all. I don't think they were. I mean, I'm sure they had that side of them. But he felt the only way he could hold up John Lennon as an individual was by denigrating the Beatles.
Completely. And he knew what impact was going to have, because I think he went abroad when it came out.
He went
to Spain or something, put his head under a pillow, didn't he?
No, he went to Japan.
He
went to Japan. They hid because he knew how much Ferrari would cost.
I know.
So it was the...
It's Serafinowicz, Ringo Remembers, Takeoff. Where Ringo remembers doing the Goldfinger Bond theme, but there's a really Beatles-y Bond theme where he's Goldfinger, Goldfinger. Absolutely amazing.
That's brilliant.
Two of them. And there's one where he remembers McCartney doing Wonderful Christmas Time, but in this universe, it's erotic Christmas time, and McCartney's basically singing about getting off with all these lady guests, and he gets escorted off by police. It's brilliant. There's a whole.
That's very funny.
And Peter Serafinowicz plays all the Beatles in the course of it, but it's worth checking out for sure.
Which he does brilliantly. All four of them. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Got the accents just right.
So that's 1971. This week in 1971, which we should probably revisit next week, won't we? See what happened in the following week. Well, any other business, Alex, we got to talk about?
We have some new patrons.
Oh,
go on, lovely.
It was good to know.
So, yeah, we should welcome Ian McNally.
Good man.
Ian.
Anne Wright.
Good.
Hello, Anne.
Guitar PK.
And who was that? Guitar?
Guitar PK.
That's fantastic.
What a money.
Okay.
Yeah.
We like the sound of him or her.
And David Burgess.
Bless him.
Welcome.
Bless him. It's lovely to have you all aboard. And we hope to see you on the Friday night quiz, which is returned for our special treat for Patreon supporters. Started a new season last Friday, and we'll be continuing next Friday. We'll continue to be where we've got more exciting Word in Your Attics coming up in the next week. We're recording at least one next week. Yeah, and there'll be lots more coming down the pike, if that's the appropriate expression.
It is now.
Anything?
Down the pike.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.